Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG, whenever we feel like it. Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you once again. Post round one podcast. Before we get into it, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at Gotham SN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. As you can tell, I'm fighting through a 2 week long illness, but we're here. Boys are back, at least for the time being. How are we?
Good. Had a pretty interesting night.
I would say interesting afternoon into the evening.
Yeah, I didn't do jumping jacks, but I also didn't like bash my head into a wall.
Right.
So I guess you can characterize that as a good night, right?
I would say so. Nick?
Yeah. I didn't kill myself because they didn't draft J.J. McCarthy. I'm very glad to be doing this podcast with you, my friend.
There we go. All right. So yeah. We're on the same page there. Let's go right for it. So, I mean, let's talk about...
Well, first of all, we got to give you your flowers because you've been saying for months that J.J. McCarthy was not going to be a top 10 pick. And even though he went 10th, he was not a top 10 pick because 11 moved up to get him one spot.
So. Yeah, I mean, it was, I'll touch on that, the most obvious smokescreen in the history of smokescreens. Typically during the pre-draft process, what you see for the good players is everything negative. This player holds his fork and knife wrong. This player, once disrespected his science teacher in fifth grade. Here's a picture of Laramie Tunsil smoking a bong. Like, all these negative things to get players to fall. Very rarely do you see just a full psyop of positive news from every single source. The only negative news, takes, whatever, that came out about J.J. McCarthy were from the fans. There was nothing from the media. There was nothing from teams. Everyone loves the kid. Everyone loves the guy. Oh, he's capable of this. He wasn't asked to do it. Okay. There was not a world in which it made sense that he would go over the top three. There was not a world in which, and maybe I'm being a little hyperbolic, the Arizona Cardinals were trading out of a player who I believe has almost immediate Justin Jefferson ability. And with the Chargers, sure, that's possible to trade out. But I also don't think the Vikings were making that initial trade to get up to 11 if they didn't believe they could get McCarthy there, because they knew that what they had was not enough to move up to the top five. So listen, laughable that even the day of the J.J. McCarthy over under was 5.5, over was plus money. So listen, if you have a brain, congratulations. Good to be on the right side of history.
Yeah, I didn't really want to start on McCarthy. I wanted to start on the player we drafted, but since we're...
Let's go chronologically here a little bit. Yeah. I do want to talk about Drake May.
Sure.
There were some things that we heard. Some people may not be comfortable talking about them. I'm comfortable talking about what I heard.
Start at the beginning of the day. Go ahead.
Well, you start.
So,
because you were more optimistic than me. You were the one that put me onto it a little bit.
I did, yeah. So about a week and a half ago, per se, and listen, I'm not an insider, but I know a guy that might know a guy, and it is what it is.
Right.
So I was told, hey, listen.
I'll say? I'll say this. There's a lot of people out there that don't like us.
I know.
There's also a lot of people that like us a lot. Yeah, and those people are willing to talk. So yeah. I'll leave it at that.
So, a week and a half ago, I think your team is really, really into Drake May. I think it's sort of all in. I said, so, what do you mean by all in? And I'm paraphrasing the conversation I don't want to go word by word, give you a, breakdown of what he said, she said, he said. But anyways, it was like, hey, listen, they like Drake May, like him enough that they're, willing to go to three. How realistic is this? It's, hey, they're going into it thinking that it's possible. And then that was about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, then kind of followed up last weekend, kind of see where things are. Actually, after the Joe Shane press conference, I reached out again, and it's like, yeah, but it's still a process, still early. And then in the weekend, I follow up like, hey, so where are things? Where, how do you think this whole thing is going to play out? And he was like, no, this is, they're really aggressive. This is the guy that they want. They think he can, you know, he's their franchise guy. He's their guy, whatever, however you want to describe this thing. And I was told they had even exchanged some offer types. So it sort of was led me to believe that like there's optimism there, because when a team starts giving you counter offers and you're giving them offers, that seems to think that you found sort of a landing space. And now it's just right. A matter of, hey, can we reach over the table and shake hands and make this deal? So then as the draft week started Monday, Tuesday, I start to see more reports that align with what I was told, you know, 10 days prior. And I got even more optimistic. And, you know, I reached out to some people that cover the team, kind of just to see what their thought process was, and it aligned. And then up until draft day, when you and I spoke, Ethan, I was very optimistic that something would get done. But sort of the New England dynamic was, and there was a lot of moving parts. There's the New England dynamic where Jonathan Kraft, more so than Robert Kraft, but the Kraft family sort of mandated, not mandated, I would say, but was like, hey, we want to leave Thursday with a quarterback, not Friday or Saturday. We want to leave Thursday with a quarterback. And they came to that conclusion. And again, this is what the Giants side sort of believes, that, you know, Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft and the Kraft family, that ownership group sort of has a group of advisors that are giving them football advice, sort of like a ghost front office. And again, I don't know if this is true, but this is sort of the feel that the Giants got, where it's like Kraft is, you know, consulting with guys outside of the organization on what to do with this specific pick. So the Giants knew this was an unorthodox type situation, but they were aggressive and they really wanted Drake May. And if they were picking second or third, they probably take Drake May. But, you know, you have, when you are trying to trade up, the other team has to want to make a deal. And as much as the Giants probably loved Drake May, I think New England, you know, at some point came to the conclusion that, hey, we love him just as much as you. And probably around Thursday, yesterday afternoon, I kind of realized, hey, you know, this is, it's when the reports started to come out that they're staying at three, and that's the belief. And you kind of saw that, it kind of was like, okay, I guess, you know, the deal didn't get done. So that was that. So for the people that think that they're still all in on their quarterback, I think I hate to pour some cold water. And we'll talk about the quarterback situation, but that's sort of what happened. And then when they stayed at six, it was the draft board. And what players do you have ranked? And I think we could argue that the player that they took at six could be potentially the best, you know, best receiver in the class, one of the best players in the class when we look back on it.
Yeah, I mean, so you heard some things leading up to the draft. Draft day, I know some people who work for a very, very prominent radio station that was out in Detroit covering the draft. When I was in touch with them, I said, you know, let me know if you hear anything, you know, if you hear some conversations, let me know what people are saying. I got a text at about 2:30 when I called Weiss, and the text was effectively, I'm with the Giants PR people. They're really trying to get Drake May. So up until hours before, this was their plan. They really, really, really pushed for Drake May. I'd also heard that Neighbors was going to be their guy if they could not get to May. And that's how it played out. That's why I had Neighbors at sixth doing my my little mocks on Twitter leading up to 8 p.m. So Neighbors was the original pick, swapped to May. Once it was like, oh, they're really, really trying. I believe the offer was 6, 47, 25 firsts, and then maybe another pick or so, mid-round stuff. But I believe that was the framework for the package. And when that didn't happen, you know, I had sort of known, all right, Neighbors is going to be the guy, and we got to live with it.
And I think New England, and again, this is, I can't confirm this, but I think New England also wanted the Giants to throw in a player. So I think you guys can sit there and think, what player would entice the Patriots from the Giants roster? There's not many, right? So
probably have to be a defensive player.
Somebody that the Patriots could look at that could substitute for a draft pick.
Right.
So you guys can think about all that and kind of come to the conclusion. But hey, listen, they tried. But ultimately,
they tried hard.
They did. They did. And there were times where they were, even yesterday, I think, where they felt like they were optimistic that they'd get something done. And the other moving part of this was New England had to then also position themselves to potentially get either a quarterback at six or then move up to four or five. And again, too many moving parts. I think they just decided we don't want to get cute with it. And maybe if Robert Kraft didn't have the mandate of, hey, you have to draft a quarterback, maybe Minnesota's offer, you know, whatever they could offer would probably be more enticing to Elliott Wolf. But because of the ownership saying we want a quarterback, I think that was played a big role in why the Giants got as close as they did and why also the Giants couldn't close on the trade, if that makes sense.
For sure. I mean, that's prevailing. I mean, multiple people wrote stories about this Tuesday and Wednesday that the Giants were actively looking to move up. I mean, Dan in The Athletic had written that, I want to say Wednesday evening, that the Giants were definitely trying. And I think we have seen, and I think this is a good example further, that Joe Shane plays it as it happens. He is willing to be adaptable and change his plan as he gets new information, as the situation changes. But ultimately, the prevailing sentiment and the most important thing for him in this front office seems to be value, that they are not going to come off of what they feel is reasonable. Sure, they could have thrown enough at New England eventually, where New England would have been insane to say no, or try maybe with Washington, whatever, Washington wasn't going to trade with you. But they played the situation as it went out. We've been pretty adamant that if you can't get Daniels, May, or Caleb Williams, you really don't need to force the pick at six. They had a guy in mind, and it's not like Neighbors is a slouch. This is genuinely, there's an argument he might be the highest upside of the three of him, Marvin, and Rome. But
there were reports of plenty of front offices had him as wide receiver one. I disagree, but it goes to show a lot of people were very, very high on him.
Exactly. So it's not like the Giants did a bad job. The process here was sound. They had an idea. We want the quarterback. Okay, this is what we can do reasonably without gouging our roster. You're right. Who's New England going to want from them? Probably Kayvon, probably Banks, one of those two guys. And you don't want to trade one of those two guys to New England because those are building block pieces on your defense. So we're going to pivot. And yeah, is it a little bit disappointing you left night one of the draft without a quarterback? Yes, but I don't think Michael Penix or Bo Nix or J.J. McCarthy was going to be that much of an improvement from Daniel Jones this season. Can any of those guys be better than Daniel Jones eventually? Yes. But if you draft a quarterback in the first round, there is an assumption your guy is going to start right away, unless you're Michael Penix. And I'm sure we'll make fun of the Falcons at some point in this conversation. But the Giants played the board as it came to them. Maybe they could have traded down, gotten an extra pick, tried to get a second back. But even then, you know, Neighbors is good enough. The value drop off from Neighbors to wherever you would have picked next, maybe Rome isn't there. Maybe you don't want to take a tight end in Bowers at 12 or 13, wherever you would have been. So they played the board best they could. And ultimately, that's what you have to do on draft night if you're not in control of the board like the Giants weren't last night. When you're picking behind the spots where all the quarterbacks are going to go, you're not in a position where you can get the pretzel and the donut and the hot dog. So they got a really good wide receiver, someone who you should genuinely be excited about. You know, I know not everybody watches as much college football, but Neighbors is exciting. This is easily the most dynamic receiver they've had since Odell. I would argue he's right there with Saquon in terms of college tape, where if you go and watch just the highlights, he pops off the screen as one of the best players on the field, if not the best player on the field. I mean, part of the reason Jaden Daniels had the year he did was he was playing with Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Neighbors, just explosive, dynamic guys. This isn't a slam dunk win,
But you should feel good about the how the draft went last night.
Yeah, so my thing with Malik Nabers is, you know, and again, we'll talk quarterbacks because there's a lot of stuff about that. But what the Giants got in Malik Nabers, this is a blue chip prospect. This is a gold jacket guy. I think this is a guy that a lot of people, when they talk about the impact Saquon Barkley can have on an offense, you know, make everybody better. Malik Nabers instantly makes the Giants offense so much better. And he instantly makes the Giants receiving core go from a weakness to like, this might be pretty good. Like when you start thinking Jalen Hyatt's speed and his abilities, and you talk about putting Wandale in the slot, and then you got Malik Nabers to worry about, like he's going to open up so much stuff for these other receivers. I just think he's a guy, he's a game changer. This is a Jamar Chase type prospect. This is, you know, Justin Jefferson. Like he is up there with those guys. Like I truly think he is one of those elite guys. I think he would have been the first receiver taken last year, the year before last, obviously with Marvin Harrison Jr. But I think his impact, his ability, you can move him around. This is what the Giants have needed for a long, since Odell Beckham, like you said, Nick. And I think, you know, you can feel excited about this player and you can understand what the Giants just acquired. Because at the end of the day, you need to have talented players, right? And Nick, you talked about it, the process. They weren't able to go get their guy, right? Because of stuff that's not in their control. So what they ended up doing was they got a blue chip prospect at six. This wasn't a situation where they reached for a guy like Ereck Flowers and you're like, what the fuck? Or Eli Apple or overdrafted at a position where it's like, wait, what are we doing? Like that this is at six? No, this is they took a player that, you know, consensusly, you look across the board, people have him one, people have him two at his position, a top three or four player in this draft, and they got him at six, and you got to be really, really excited. And one of the benefits of quarterbacks going one, two, and three is then you get a blue chipper like that that falls into your lap at six. And I think for Malik Nabers in itself, the player that the Giants added, they added a really good, great prospect that I think, because Ethan, you talk about this a lot with top 10 picks, instant impact and ability to impact results on games. Malik Nabers is going to do that. He is going to add a win or two to the Giants win column because of how great of a player I think he will be, regardless what else is around him, specifically at quarterback. Go ahead.
I wanted to add one more thing onto that. We all saw the extension AJ Brown got last night. We're all aware of what CeeDee Lamb is going to get, what Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase are going to get. If you get the blue chip wide receiver that we think Nabers is, and he is playing on that rookie contract, you are the wide receiver pay boom that's happening right now. This is a financially prudent move too. This is not just the best player available. It's great wide receivers don't become available. We'll see if T. Higgins or Ayuk or Debo get traded over the next day and a half or so. But even if you do, those guys are going to want the long-term extension that comes with it once you trade for them. So you lock Nabers up for 4 years, and then you get the fifth-year option. And if he is what we think he is, he will be playing for probably less than half or maybe even a quarter of what his actual market value is in today's NFL. And one more thing, this guy, in theory, should keep getting better. That the Giants are going to build out this offense. Now you have a wide receiver who is a true number one. That's going to make his life easier because it's going to get other guys better opportunities. Whether or not Darren Waller comes back, I don't think that it matters all that much, because even if he was,
I don't want him back, but we'll talk about that another time.
For sure. But you throw him, you got Hyatt in there now. So Hyatt has a little bit more room to operate because the defense has to respect Nabers on the other side. You got Bellinger underneath. That opens up more stuff. This is about as useful a pick as you can have. And the other encouraging thing about this is it gives us another glance into the understanding of how Joe Shane thinks about things. I think that's my favorite component of the draft, is it's a real honest account, and it's one of the real only ways you get non-BS, because general manager doesn't want to tip his hand. He doesn't want to tell you what he's actually thinking because it's not in his advantage. But based on who he picks, you get an understanding of, okay, he prioritizes this type of skill set. He envisions this type of role within the offense. Now, the Giants offense is still pretty underwhelming in terms of personnel. Neighbors is going to walk into that locker room and instantly be the most talented skill position player and probably the second or third best player on the entire offense right out of the box without any training camp or any prep behind Andrew Thomas. So that's a good starting point. They definitely need a lot more, but everything about this pick screams our GM knows what he's doing. Sure, you wanted Drake May, you wanted Jaden Daniels, but this is not bad. You know, this is not a shit sandwich. The Giants did pretty well here.
Agreed. I think the biggest discussion here is about the quarterbacks they passed on.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with everything that you guys are saying. You know, we tend to be on the same page. We have great chemistry. It's why this podcast is so great. But it's true. Like, you for years, we watched, I won't even say his name, just not even just have the worst process, but have no process. And it's very clear that there's two avenues for the Giants to go. They can reach for a quarterback that they didn't like, obviously, hope that it works out and that Dable can coach him up.
At six, ironically.
Right, exactly. Again. Or build up the roster and figure out the quarterback later. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, figure out the quarterback later. Like, that's so easy. No, figuring out the quarterback situation is never easy. How many times do we look at a draft every year? Quarterbacks bust at every single position. We laugh at the teams that take these quarterbacks. We're about to laugh at some teams that took quarterbacks in the mid first round, because I think it's just a huge waste of a pick. Some of these guys, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, but it's not easy, but you just don't know. Like, nobody knew that Jaden Daniels would have this crazy ascension and become the second overall pick. No one knew that J.J. McCarthy, except for Dean Brugler, apparently, that J.J. McCarthy would have this crazy ascension despite his lack of college productivity and go in the top 15 of a draft that featured exclusively offense. No one knew that Aaron Rodgers would be so disgruntled that he'd follow in the footsteps of his predecessor and force his way to the Jets. Like, you just don't know what's going to happen. And if road one is drafting your guy, but your guy's not there and you can't get your guy no matter what, then you have to go road two. And you know what? I'm perfectly fine with going road two, building up the roster, letting them figure it out, because that's their job. That's what they're paid to do. They have a much longer leash if they go that route than if they were to reach on a guy they're not confident on and they blow it. So at this point, build the roster, figure it out. That's the way to go. I don't understand why people are still upset over this. The time to be upset was 6 months ago when the Giants are winning games that they had no business of winning with Tommy Cutlets at quarterback and Tyrod Taylor coming in. And to my point, they're winning games with those guys. So I have faith in the coaching staff. I have faith in the general manager. They will figure it out. The Daniel Jones contract is a blemish on them. But you know what? If they had gone with my suggestion, which was to just franchise tag the guy, they're still in this position. They still have, not entirely, but they still have the sixth overall pick. They still don't get Drake May. And yeah, okay, the financial situation becomes a little bit more palatable next year and the year after that and the year after that. But again, it's not like, oh, if they didn't pay Daniel Jones, they still don't have Drake May this year. They still don't have Caleb Williams this year. The coaching staff was too good. There were still too many okay pieces on the roster. So it is what it is. It sucks. But we got to just, you know, play the ball where it lies, to borrow a golf idiom. And this is where it is.
Expanding off of that, I do think one thing that's worth considering is, when you can't get that guy, when you can't get your quarterback wherever it is at the top end of the draft, you look at the situations around the league that have ended up in that kind of situation. You can look at the Browns before Watson, where Mayfield, they were pretty unhappy. You can look at the Bears in perpetuity. You can look at the Rams with Goff, the Lions pre-Goff, the Texans pre-getting CJ Stroud, the Buccaneers before Tom Brady got there, the Saints since Drew Brees. If you put in enough work on the edges of your roster and you remain reasonably competitive, it's not the most satisfying place to be. You would always rather be god awful so you can get the quarterback at the top of the draft, but you are in games. You are hanging around. If you believe in your coaching staff, which I am still pretty strongly in the camp that I think Dable is going to do a good job, you have to wait, and you have to wait. And I understand there's a lingering feeling amongst Giant fans that we've been waiting long enough for something long term, but we've done the hard part. We got rid of the bad general manager. We got rid of the clown head coach. This general manager and this coach are building. They can't get guys that aren't there. That's the big issue. And unless you're going to have a guy fall into your lap in the draft, or a disgruntled player wants to come to your landing spot, the best thing you can do, and to Ethan's point, is build up the roster to the point that when a quarterback becomes available that wants to change scenery, then you can have the conversation because you're an attractive landing spot. This is the best of a bad situation. The only real way to get yourself that quarterback most of the time is to draft them. Short of that, and I don't think the Giants are going to take a quarterback today or tomorrow. I don't think that's in the cards for them. I don't think it would make a ton of sense unless it's like a round six or seven guy just to have as the third quarterback. Other than that, they're doing the best they can with the situation at hand. If you believe in Dable and Shane, that you think they know what they're doing and they're going to do a good job, you shouldn't be ecstatic that they didn't get their quarterback, but they couldn't. It would be one thing if they had the opportunity to take a guy and they picked Neighbors. They didn't have that opportunity. This is the best they can do with the situation at hand. So yes, I am tired of the Giants being a mediocre or outright bad football team too, but you have done the hard work. You have the GM with the vision. You have the coach who is in alignment with him, where they have an agreement on what the roster needs to look like, and you are getting there. It is unsatisfying to play meaningless football. I understand, but this is the best you can do.
We've done it for years. So you're used to it.
It's true. At this point, if you
are
still...
One more year is not going to kill you.
At this point, if you are still complaining about the Giants being bad, what did you think was going to happen when you look at these rosters they've fielded over the last couple of years?
Guys, J.J. McCarthy was not starting day one.
No.
It was not starting day one.
And if they were, the team would have been bad, and it would have messed up their development, and it would have put both the player and the team not in a position to succeed. I think New England probably won't start May right away. Penix obviously won't start right away. Daniels might start right away, and Caleb will start right away. But for the purposes of this,
Daniels is starting right away.
I think so, but you never know. But the last thing I wanted to get on before I throw it back to one of you, you can only do what's in front of you. As Ethan said, you got to play it as it lies. This is the best they can do with the assets they have and the situation around them. Keep building up the roster, become an attractive landing spot. And hey, maybe there's a guy who has the crazy college season next year who shoots up the draft boards. Because right now, you know, you're looking at the board for next year. None of those guys are particularly enticing, and I'm sure we'll talk ad nauseum about Ewers and Shador and all of the other guys that are up. None of these guys are ooh and ah the way the guys were this year. But if you believe in Dable, you believe in Shane, you got to bide your time and wait for the right opportunity to strike.
Yeah, listen, I think all the talk about next year's draft class, I just don't buy into it right now. So much things change year to year. They change week to week, so you can't really start, you know, making a definitive assessment on a draft class right now. And I don't care what the early prognosis is. So listen, I think the way I look at this, what happened last night is what you guys have basically alluded to, like they tried. But throughout this entire draft season, the offseason, they did tons of homework on all these quarterbacks. They literally looked at every single one of these quarterbacks, brought them in for 30 visits, went to the pro day, did stuff at the combine, had private workouts. They did a lot of work on J.J. McCarthy, who a lot of people seem to be upset about. And it wasn't because of a smokescreen, because they wanted somebody to come and take it, you know, they wanted somebody to come up for a quarterback. Like they sat at six and they got Malik Neighbors, like many of us thought that they could do. Like you looked at the mock drafts, and all of them had Malik Neighbors getting to six. So I feel like people are looking at this and saying, you know, well, they were never serious. No, they understand their quarterback situation. That's the important thing here, right? They're not delusional about it.
The fact that they tried as hard as they did.
Yes.
They know.
They, of course they know. It's not some, like, he can go up there and he can sit up there and he can give a million, you know, votes of confidence to Daniel Jones, but they actions speak louder than words. We saw what they did. It wasn't the time is so limited, right? During the draft season, where you don't have time to go fly out to North Carolina or Southern California or Louisiana and watch these quarterbacks and bring these quarterbacks in and do all these things because you're trying to create an illusion, a smokescreen. And smokescreen for what? You know, what are you creating a smokescreen for? So I think the most important thing here that puts me at ease is I believe the Giants have a clear understanding of how dire their quarterback situation is. And I think that gives me hope, right? More so than process and this and that, that, hey, like, they understand, you know, but, you know, when it came to this draft class, picks 1, 2, and 3 were teams that all had their mind made up on quarterbacks. And while pick 3, I think, was a lot more open to it than 1 and 2, listen, you love a guy, another team loves a guy. It takes two to tango here. So what Giant fans that are upset right now that they don't have a quarterback need to understand is that the team did their homework. They did it on everybody.
There's two groups here. There's fans that are upset that they didn't get a quarterback, and there's fans that are upset the Giants didn't agree with their assessment on a quarterback and skipped over that.
But there's also guys that are people that are like, and again, I don't want to make this about this group of Giants, but there are people that are like, take a quarterback because your current one sucks. That is the worst mindset. That's how you get here
in the first place.
Exactly. You do not say, hey, my quarterback sucks, so I need to go to the draft and draft another quarterback. That's not how this works. The NFL draft is not a grocery store where you can walk in and say, hey, my milk is expired, so I need to go buy new milk.
Right? It's a great analogy.
So this notion that, you know, hey, Daniel Jones sucks, we need a quarterback, let's just go take whatever quarterback. Like, I don't buy that. There's so much layers to it. Again, do you think this guy can win you a Super Bowl? No? Then what's the conversation that we're having, right? Does your medical team, does your doctors believe that this guy's knees can hold up in the NFL? There's a lot of red flags. It might not be something we're willing to sign off on in pick 6. Well, okay, you got those things. These front office take into account. They do extensive work on these guys. So listen, I respect people's opinions. I respect the work all these people put in. But at the end of the day, it can't be like, you can criticize a team because they didn't draft your guy, but to sit up there and then try to flip this into something that, hey, the Giants, this is a vote of confidence. Like, this is not a vote of confidence to anything. This is a team that understands their quarterback position. They just differentiate with how they view the quarterbacks compared to the how you or I may view it. So I'm sort of taken back by the amount of people that are look at this, you know, decision to take Malik Nibbers.
And some of it is just trying to be contrarian. Some of it is just trying to be, oh, I know more than them because I disagree type of thing.
We live in the I told you so world.
Yes.
Yeah, right? We do.
It's crazy how much people want to just be that guy.
It's not like you did the evaluation, you know. It's not like these people were flying to Ann Arbor and they sat down with JJ McCarthy or to Washington and talked to Penix. Like, if Shane and Dable had come to the consensus that we are going to take McCarthy or Penix or Bo Nix, I would not have felt good about that personally based on my opinion of those players, but I would have been a little more inclined to believe in those players if Dable and Shane had come to the consensus of taking them, because I still believe in their process. Ultimately, their process has all made sense. Have the results been there? Not really, but the process is sound. It's logical. It's not irrational. And that's all you can ask from your decision makers. You know, there's no guarantee anyone you take in any slot is going to be successful. All you can do is take the guy and try and put them in a position to succeed. So with that in mind, being that the way they went the way they did, I don't have as much hesitation about not taking a quarterback, because if they really liked one of those guys, they would have taken them. The opportunity was there, but they didn't.
And think about who they skipped over. Like,
yeah, that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like, the three quarterbacks as of right now. Okay. If the one thing that I've noticed about the people who are upset that Shane and Dable skipped over these quarterbacks is that they all say they better hope they're right, because if they're wrong, then they'll be fired.
I hate that, Art. I hate that.
It's not true, first of all. Second of all, they would be fired much quicker if they got these guys wrong. If they took a risk on someone at number six in a draft class this loaded, on talent outside the quarterback position, I'm saying, and got it wrong. Okay? So when you're evaluating these guys, the number one issue with J.J. McCarthy is that the volume wasn't there. When you are evaluating a Caleb Williams, when you're evaluating a Jaden Daniels, when you're evaluating a Drake May, there is so much tape. If you see stuff that you like, you see them do it 20, 30, 40, 50 times over the course of a season, two seasons, whatever it is. You can be fairly confident whether or not they'll be able to replicate that and be able to do what you're going to be asking them to do. When you have someone like J.J. McCarthy, who is a project, who was not a volume thrower, be it because his team was so good that he wasn't asked to, even though I think that logic can be used the other way, where if he was good enough to do it consistently, he would have been. It is a far riskier pick at number six when you see only a guy only do it 10 to 20 times over the course of a season or two seasons. So if you are less sure that you're going to be able to mold him and develop some of the flashes that you saw on film, that is a riskier prospect. Michael Penix Jr. We're talking about Daniel Jones with multiple neck injuries, a torn ACL. He's had ankle problems before. Really, you're going to be upset that the Falcons decided to take this guy? Two torn ACLs and a shoulder injury? Don't even get me started on Bo Nix. That guy flat out fucking sucks.
He's also like 35 years old.
And listen, those of you upset that they skipped over Bo Nix just shows that none of you watch college football.
If Bo Nix at Auburn was terrible.
Brother, it's the terrible amount of money that Bo Nix at Auburn lost me is unfathomable.
I ate the cheese because they beat Justin Herbert when Bo was a true freshman. God. And I was like, okay, he's freaky. Auburn's good.
Sucks.
And he went to Oregon where it's all layups.
The Broncos are so lucky.
Jane Daniels too. Jane Daniels played with Brandon Ayuk.
Lucky that Michael Penix is the most laughable pick, because they should be getting clowned right now.
People believe in Sean Payton for some reason. I understand the prolific offenses, but a lot of Sean Payton's career success is tied to Drew Brees. Correct. Which, like, fundamentally, Drew Brees is one of the best quarterbacks of all time. It didn't end well for him particularly. He couldn't throw more than 10 yards down the field, but Brees at his peak, one of the best we've ever seen.
Maybe that's why he likes Bo Nix, because Bo Nix can't do that right now.
That's true. I've watched a lot of Bo Nix, whether it's at Auburn or at Oregon. He is probably a low-end starter. He is probably, at best, he is the 23rd or 24th best quarterback in the NFL. You can't take that sixth level.
I'd rather have Daniel Jones over Bo Nix.
Exactly, because you at least have the athleticism. Nix can't really run around. No. Jones is mediocre at best, but at least he'll battering ram himself into the line of scrimmage for 2 yards. Bo Nix isn't doing that. So, yeah, the Giants, they survived. They did not make a fatal mistake. They are in a good position.
One other thing. I actually, when I did my quarterback rankings, I had Penix fourth above J.J. McCarthy. And I actually
I can see an argument for that.
I do like Michael Penix a lot. Like, if they were to trade back into the first round and took Michael Penix, I would not have been upset. I do like Penix. The knee stuff does bother me, but the dude has a live arm. Atlanta, I mean, listen. When you sit there with yourself and like, how can I justify this? Right? There's no justification for this. This isn't a 20-year-old quarterback where you're like, oh, I mean, he's 20, maybe a year or two you sit, then he's 24 years old, man. Like, what is he gonna be 28 when he makes his first start? But yeah, with the quarterback stuff, any conversation about why the Giants take a quarterback that starts with, well, Daniel Jones, I tune it out right away because it's just not, you have to tell me why, you don't tell me why the Giants need to replace a quarterback. Tell me why the Giants should replace the quarterback with the one that you want without telling me that they need to replace the previous guy. And so I'm very thrilled with Malik Nabers. The worry about the quarterback position is still there, but I thought about this and I actually made a list and I want to run this list by you guys, right? Okay. So I feel like the NFL quarterback situations are sort of not mirroring, but like teetering onto the same stratosphere as NBA superstars getting disgruntled and requesting a trade. I mean, we saw it with Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson, where these guys came out and requested a trade. Now, some of them stayed. Some of them moved on. Russell Wilson, we knew like he wasn't happy. He didn't. I don't think he did he formally request a trade, or was it kind of like, hey, I love Seattle, but if you're going to trade me, here's a list of teams, right? So I made a list, right? And I'm going to start at number five.
Is this people that you think could become disgruntled?
Yes, and over the course of the next 12 to 36 months.
Okay.
Okay.
Is number Josh five. Allen on the list?
Nick, let me just do this fucking thing. Number five. This one might surprise you guys, and I don't know what you guys think about this quarterback, but Jared Goff.
Pretty Ricky said that they are working on that extension. Okay. Not to burst your bubble, but he was on my list as well.
Okay, Jared Goff, number five. Number four. And again, this is my list. And again, the reason why this is not higher, this particular quarterback is not higher, is because I actually think that he's not the type of quarterback to do this based on his personality. But Justin Herbert just seems like, you know, and when you think about these things, you got to factor in ownership. Like, the Spanos were not exactly good. They paid Justin Herbert, but then I think the owners, Jim Harbaugh, like, can that relationship work? Right. He's Jim Harbaugh is a, you know, he's a personality, right? And he's not afraid to like lay into it. But then at the flip side, Justin Herbert's not he doesn't seem like a high maintenance guy, right? Like some of these other quarterbacks. Number three, Joe Burrow. How can I sort of phrase this? I think Cincinnati is sort of playing a very dangerous game, whereas they have a very good nucleus of players that they can win now with that are also very young, that they are like, you have to beat Kansas City. You don't beat Kansas City by just getting rid of players. So like, you're like, Trey Hendrickson requests a trade. You know, we know the situation with T. Higgins. Like, there's the Jamar Chase contract negotiations coming up. Like, we talked about, like, Nick, you talked about these receivers getting paid and the price tag keeps going up. Like, I mean, are we 100% sure that they're just going to cough up? Like, are they going to make Jamar Chase the next highest paid receiver? We're all assuming that, but this is the cheapest owner in probably American professional sports in Michael Brown, who's stingy as fuck and is like, you know, so could Joe Burrow get disgruntled if he starts to see ownership kind of being like, you know, what the hell's going on? Joe Burrow, unlike Justin Herbert, I think is a little bit more high maintenance. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I will fucking do whatever Joe Burrow wants me
more,
to do.
You've got more swagger.
Yeah. Number two, and I go back between two and one a lot, but number two, and this is not the order how I would want them. This is just the order how I think like 1 to 5, which quarterbacks could request a trade. Number two, Josh Allen. Buffalo. So I follow a lot of Buffalo media guys. And if you guys want to find a bunch of people that run circles, no pun intended, for an organization, follow Buffalo Bills content and media guys.
Is that bad?
Holy fuck.
State media?
Brandon Bean can do no wrong. Sean McDermott can do no wrong. Like, this is Trey Stephon. Like, they went from there's no way they're training Stephon Diggs, there's no way they're training Stephon Diggs, to then like justifying it within 15 minutes. Because I literally, well, I was like, okay, if they trade Stephon Diggs, I want to see how these guys flip it. I'm not going to point them out. But what's happening in Buffalo is they're, again, they have a, they have to replenish their roster, but they've just sort of like completely tore down except Josh Allen. Like, they have still Deion Dawkins and they have some players. But Nick, Ethan, if I were to ask you guys right now, who is the second best player on the Buffalo Bills, what would you say?
Ed Oliver, maybe? I'm trying to think on their defense. Maybe it's Kincaid.
Maybe a tight end, okay, who is not one of the best players at his position. Maybe Ed Oliver, who is a good player, but on his best day, he's like, what, a pro bowler? Like, I don't think he's an all pro player, right? Yeah. I'm not insulting. I'm just saying.
I got your answer.
The who?
Adonai Mitchell.
So a guy they haven't even drafted yet who might have some like serious health issues. All right. So you see what I'm saying about the Buffalo roster. It could get to a point, and the losses continue to pile up for Josh Allen. The pressure mounts. Hey, you're not beating, you know, your nemesis. Let's, you know, maybe, and the Dable Shane connection. And then number one, and this is going to drive fans crazy, Dak Prescott.
It's the most obvious. It is the most obvious. I think it'll be the most cost effective. I think the years are not going to be that bad. Like, what better way to stick it to Jerry Jones?
He's in the final year of his deal. He doesn't need to request a trade. The Cowboys cannot franchise tag him.
Right.
The Giants are, they're like, I know it's early, and maybe it's just me being on a high that they added a great offensive skill player. But, dude, I like what they're doing. Like, they went out and they just replenished their offensive line room. They got starting caliber guys, and they got depth guys. You guys are out on Evan Neal. But like, let's see what happens with Evan Neal with the new offensive line, coach. Maybe they can figure something out, make him competent. Like, I want you everyone to go look at the Dallas Cowboys projected starting offensive line right now, and then look at the Giants. I think the Giants have a better offensive line than the Dallas Cowboys right now. I truly believe that. I think they have a better running back. I think the receiver room belongs to Dallas right now. But would it shock you guys if Malik Nabers a year from now is in the same sort of tier, or a year or two from now is in the same tier as a CeeDee Lamb, like a bona fide wide receiver one? Like, would that shock you guys?
No.
Ethan, you're probably expecting that, right?
Yeah.
So, again, and then you add in the fact there of Jalin Hyatt. Like, remember, last year, if they would have taken Jalin Hyatt 22nd or 26th, wherever they were picking overall, I would have been fine with it. I think Jalin Hyatt is a unique talent. You cannot coach the type of speed that he has. I think Wandale's a great security blanket. I think maybe they can add a tight end tonight or tomorrow. Like, I think they're building something offensively. You guys love Brian Daboll. We'll see what happens with Mike Kafka. Like, if Dak looks at the situation and is like, dude, I just can't deal with the Joneses anymore, and what better way to stick it to them than go to New York and be successful? Again, I'm not advocating for the Giants to sign Dak Prescott. What I'm simply telling you is, from a Dak Prescott perspective, like, holy shit, man. Like,
it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
it does. It absolutely does.
And then defensively, the Giants are building a good defense. Like, their defensive line is good. We'll see. Maybe they add an interior defensive lineman tonight. Again, I think the Cowboy defense is a lot better. But the Giants are building a strong defensive line, man. Like, Brian Burns, they are adding really, like, they're not just adding depth guys. They added super like star caliber players. What they also need now is those high draft picks that they pick, like Kayvon and Evan Neal and Deontay Banks. They need those guys now to sort of start playing like stars, playing like those upper tier players. And that would make their roster even more enticing to a veteran quarterback. So that's my top five list right there.
And building off of the Dak point, because I think there's one more element to this. I think the Cowboys are old. You look around that roster, a lot of the pieces on that team, aside from Parsons, aside from Diggs, most of that team is on the older side. Lamb's going into his fifth year, but he's not old. But the Cowboys are an older roster. McCarthy, not exactly the most forward-thinking or visionary coach. I think there's a real argument that the Giants are going to, on top of what you just said, Weiss, about building the roster the right way, the Giants are going to have the flexibility where if Dak were to become available, they can still add more stuff with him, that they can prolong his prime and ease the decline of coming down from his prime, because the Giants are still on the upward trajectory of their roster construction and they are going to have time to figure it out. And one more thing, I know there are Giant fans listening to this right now who can only picture Dak playing mediocre at best football in big games. The counterpoint to that is if you've been walking through the desert for 5 to 10 years like the Giants have, any water will do. I am not in a position.
Dak has owned us for like 10 years now.
I am in complete agreement. I think Dak at best is the 8th or 7th best quarterback in the entire NFL. That would be the best quarterback play the Giants have had since Obama was president. Like, not even hyperbole, at least 10 years, at least 10 years. So yes, Dak is not on the Burrow, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Herbert tier, but he's the next tier down, and it would easily be the best play the Giants have had at that position in a decade, at least a decade.
Shout out to RJ Ochoa, who Ethan and I know very well, our guy, who this is the projected offensive line right now for the Dallas Cowboys. Now, they could actually add more guys in this draft, but we know about rookie offensive linemen very well. Their left tackle is Tyler Guyton, who they took 29th overall. Their left tackle is Tyler Smith, who's good. Their center is Brock Hoffman. Does anybody know who Brock Hoffman is?
Not a clue.
No. Their right guard is Zach Martin. Nick just talked about aging guys in the roster. Zach Martin's still really, really good, but again, he's getting old. And their right tackle is Terrence Steele, who Cowboys fans hate. They don't have a running back. CeeDee Lamb could potentially hold out. Jerry Jones keeps, like, taking shots at Dak.
He does.
Right? And adds this pressure. We talked about their defense. Like, DeMarcus Lawrence is getting old. They lost some guys. Micah's in line for a payday. There's like some weird stuff about some people in that organization that kind of have some mixed feelings about Micah, which I don't know. Trayvon Diggs is coming off of ACL. Who's their cornerback too? There's that guy that lived there.
Deron Bland.
Deron Bland. Yeah. So while I still think the Cowboys are a lot better than the Giants, I think when you look at like trajectory wise, like Nick said, one is ascending while the other is descending with an owner that seems to be driving that vehicle of dissension right down, you know, into fucking hell. So
literally, because that's where Jerry Jones is going. But
yeah, so that's my thing. Is there an honorable mention somewhere in there? Like, am I missing a guy that could potentially? I thought about the Kirk Cousins thing, but I don't.
That's not happening.
Yeah,
he also doesn't fit. He's a little
one guy. Well, I mean, there's one guy who I would absolutely hate.
Go ahead.
Think about it. Think about it for a second.
Obviously, you're not talking about Deshaun Watson, right?
No.
Okay, you're not talking. Like Matthew Stafford's a guy I thought about. Maybe.
Yeah, too old.
Yeah, too old. Man, oh man.
Down south.
Mars? Oh. I did think about this guy, but he's Baker? Also in line for a big day. Trevor Lawrence. They're very close to a contract extension with him.
Yeah, that's rumored to be the highest paid quarterback, which is absolutely disgusting. Yeah.
So
the latest guy is always gonna get the biggest
not him.
Yeah. I thought about Trevor, but Trevor is like, A, I don't think he's that type of personality to do that. And B, I like you guys said, man, I think he's in line. Like, I wouldn't be surprised over the next day or two we hear that he got paid. The reason why I put Goff is because, like, if the Lions don't pay him this offseason and they regress.
I think they're going to pay him, though.
Okay. But if I'm saying, like, if they regress a little bit. And they pay everyone else. Could they be open to the idea of possibly, you know, looking at something else? So that's sort of where I'm at. It's going to be interesting. Like, are all five of these guys going to be like loving their environment,
Odds are no.
So, I do have a question for you about
One of the guys you brought up. Do you think Josh Allen is the type of guy who would say it's me or the coach to the front office at some point?
Yes, I do. Yes, absolutely. Josh Allen is the type of guy that would go to ownership.
Okay.
Nick, let me ask you a question. You think Haley Steinfeld likes Buffalo or New York City?
He had her at the Bill at the Sabres home opener. There were 6,500 people at the Sabres home opener, and the Bills were in a box. And Haley Steinfeld sitting there looking around.
Listen, we're gonna get a second try at this. All right, Sierra, Pittsburgh, or New York City? Haley, Buffalo or New York City? We're gonna get.
She's a real one, man. She went to like 5 Sabres regular season games. The Sabres were like 20 points out of a playoff spot this year. That's a real girlfriend right there.
You know what? I look forward to her waving the rally towel at MSG with Brian Daboll if that's what it takes.
Oh man, hey, it's kind of sad we have to wish cast other quarterbacks onto our team because our quarterback situation is so terrible.
Bro,
but at least it's
it
a fun
years.
Conversation. At least
doing
it's
it for
fun.
10 years.
Look, I'm telling you, we're headed toward that. Like
we were close to former future Giant Aaron Rodgers. Ethan almost willed it into existence, but we were a year off.
Right, city, wrong team.
They were asking John Mara about whether he would trade for Deshaun Watson with all the sex allegation stuff at Joe Shane's introductory press conference 2 years ago. So like the fact that people are just like thinking that this is not possible, I think you're deluded. Like Lamar Jackson requested a trade, teams could have lined up to pay him. I don't know why they didn't, but like
that was
this
cool,
stuff. Man. This stuff it happens. Like it's happening. Aaron Rodgers requested a trade. Russell Wilson requested a trade. Deshaun Watson requested a trade even before the allegations. Like this, like if Josh Allen gets bounced again in the playoffs and he has to carry the Buffalo.
What if they don't make the playoffs?
What if they don't make the playoffs?
Yeah, the Jets could definitely be better than the Bills this year, and it won't be Josh Allen's fault.
Right.
Like, could they? And there's another guy I thought about, but this was more so if the team realizes that he's not the guy.
Oh, don't say Tua.
And that's Tua. Yeah.
Tua.
Brian Daboll connection. You have to factor this kind of stuff.
Tua would be
man.
Better than Daniel Jones, but I don't think you can win a Super Bowl with Tua unless the team around him is perfect. You know, like if you're the 49ers, you could win a Super Bowl with Tua. The Giants would need a lot more roster surgery to make the roster that good with Tua as the quarterback.
Three things of the five guys, three things that I'm interested to see what happens over the next year. Buffalo A makes the playoffs and gets bounced. Buffalo doesn't make the playoffs. The roster is not improved. Sean McDermott is still, making mistakes. Joe Burrow starts to see his owner kind of lock his pockets and pretend he doesn't have a checkbook. And Ja'Marr Chase gets disgruntled. T. Higgins doesn't get his money. Like, they trade T. Higgins. Or they don't re-sign him after the franchise tag. What, like, is it out of the realm of possibility? Like, I seriously think about this.
It's not, dude. Listen, Joe Shane has big balls. Okay. It's public how hard he tried to get to number 3. This guy's going to be relentless.
He was,
which, funny enough, was the word that was used to describe his attempt to get to number 3 was, to me, relentless.
Yeah.
He knows he needs a quarterback. He knows.
And guess
he's
what?
Going to get a quarterback.
The more they add talent, and if these players that they're picking sort of, become the players that we think they can, it's just another added layer of pressure. Because cost control, like, he's big on that, right? He's big on the value, like corner on a rookie deal. Receiver, rookie deal. Another receiver, rookie deal. Defense, edge rusher, rookie deal. Like you start to, these things start to add, offensive lineman, rookie deal. So I'm interested, man. I'm interested to see what happens. I let's touch on day 2 because it sort of goes right into it. I am in favor of the Giants continuing to add good players on offense. There's a guard, Christian Haynes at UConn, that I really, really like. I love Trey Benson out of Florida State. And I don't know, Ethan, second round, you're a big analytics guy. Is a second round okay to draft a running back?
I prefer not, but it's not the worst thing in the world.
Okay, so
I see a lot of people mocking Trey Benson in round 3.
He's very good.
He's very good.
I don't think round three, man. I think there's a lot of teams that are going to be buying for running backs early on. I think sort of that back end of the back end of the second round. Well, the Cowboys basically told us they're taking Jonathan Brooks.
Yeah.
If you listen to Jerry Jones, by the way,
Brooks is basic, good.
Yeah, Brooks he just told you. So I would love a running back. I would love to continue to solidify the offense line. I would love a tight end, regardless what happens with Darren Waller. Just add off, like, their offense was terrible, man. It was so bad. And I guess a lot of it's tied to the quarterback, but like their offensive line was shit too, and so was their skill players. So continue to get better on the offense, man. I think I would love a cornerback, but like I have this dream, or not dream, but like I have this vision of like an elite offense that is just enticing to a quarterback who's sitting in a shitty situation. So sort of like what the Jets did, right? But they had a lot of similar to that. But the Giants are doing it the right way. They're actually building an offensive line. And you know, the Jets had Garrett Wilson, but yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing I was thinking about last night. I couldn't sleep. I watched Malik Nabers highlights and I was like, picture a quarterback throwing to him. And I was like, oh.
We're sick.
We are. All right.
Should we wrap it up? We'll do another one after rounds 2 through 7.
Yeah, unless something crazy happens.
Yeah.
Are you guys in favor of a quarterback, Spencer Rattler?
No, I hate Rattler.
Jordan Travis?
No.
He broke his leg.
Joe Milton?
No.
Nick, you don't want to take Joe Milton just so we can tweet out that video of him throwing that pass in his pro day?
If they take Joe Milton in like the 6th round, sure. But
great. That's a great preseason quarterback right there.
He would be fun to watch in one preseason.
He'd look great in shorts.
Yeah. All right.
Follow us on Twitter, EthanGSN, NYG Daily, at Nick Zeraris, GothamSN. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. You know the deal. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Peace.